Welcome to In Between Expats, and thank you for listening to the show. My name is Rodrigo Bravo, and let's get started. I want to start this episode by thanking all those who listened to last week's show. Whether you're in Louisiana, Virginia, Texas, India, or Russia, your attention is greatly appreciated. I hope to continue providing content that you'll enjoy. Following her departure from her native Quito, Ecuador at the age of 12, Grace Gomez never thought she would one day become a bilingual journalist for NBC and Telemundo for the New England area. She's based out of Boston, Massachusetts. Grace talks about the initial difficulties of being a young foreigner, but thanks to her family's support and Grace's resilience, this four-time Emmy winner found success and her American dream. If you're in the New England area, please tune in the news and watch Grace at work. Thank you very much, Grace, for being on the show today. And before we talk about your life in the U.S., not just as a reporter, but also as an expat, please tell me about Quito, your hometown in Ecuador, where you lived until the age of 12.
Rodrigo, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to have this space to talk about not only me as an Ecuadorian living in another country, but to talk about Arlindo, Ecuador, which I dearly miss. So yes, I was born and raised up until the age of 12 in Quito. And one of the things that I vividly remember about Quito is pretty much like the food, the fiestas de Quito, the Quito festivities, which is at the beginning of December. And just the fact that there's so much history in the city. When you walk down Quito, it's like an amazing place to go and visit. I'm actually hopefully going in the next couple of months after 2 years that I haven't been. But for me, Quito represents family, represents pretty much a large part of me. It represents who I am because I carry with me all the traditions and all the culture that my parents raised me with. And so Quito for me, it's home. It's weird to say that because I obviously have lived most of my life outside of Ecuador, but Quito for me is my home.
What do you remember the most from that city? As a parenthesis, Quito has the largest and best preserved historical center of all Latin America. Mm-hmm.
The one that always I go back to is the churches, El Palacio de Carondelet. I actually went once the first time I was able to go back to Ecuador and visit, I went and did a tour of El Palacio de Carondelet, which is almost like the White House.
It's the presidential palace.
The presidential palace. Yes, it's beautiful inside. And really, any building you go in, La Plaza de San Francisco, La Plaza de Santo Domingo, if you go to La Basilica, all these churches that I'm mentioning, inside, it's so beautiful and so well kept. And it's you really are in awe of how all this was constructed and even more so of how very well kept it is up until the day.
People are surprised when I tell them that when you live in Quito, you live surrounded by 7 active volcanoes. They just can't understand how people can live in such under a constant threat. But indeed, it's a really beautiful city and it's growing. I haven't been there for more than 20 years and I probably wouldn't be able to recognize it. But you moved to the US in 1998 at the age of 12. You were a preteen. And as a bit of context, you moved because Ecuador was undergoing an economic crisis, hyperinflation. 10% of the population left the country. They went to many different countries, not just the United States, but also Europe. Can you tell me a little bit about what you remember from those first years? You and your family settled in New Jersey.
Yeah, so it was a big change for me as a 12-year-old. So ahead of me coming to the States, my mom had already moved here to kind of like open up a path for my dad and I and my siblings to come. So I was just told, oh, we're going to States to visit mom. So I was never told we're moving. Obviously, it's a big shock for a 12-year-old to kind of say that. But once I arrived to the States, I think the biggest shock for me was the culture, because there were so many cultures, the amount of diversity that there was with all the countries. I pretty much ended up in North Bergen, which is part of Hudson County, literally 15, 20 minutes away from the city, from New York City. And so in that area, there were still a lot of Latinos that had grown up in the States that spoke fluently English, and the Latinos that had just arrived, which I was part of that. So for me, walking into school where I was sharing my classroom with Colombians, Cubans, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, Peruvians. It was weird because for a 12-year-old, I couldn't fathom the idea that people talk differently than me, that certain words were had different meanings. Those two were the big shock. And then the third one was the language. Nothing compares to what you're taught in English classes in Ecuador. Absolutely not. It does nothing for you when you come here.
Right. I mean, you get 4 years of my house is white and my dog is black.
Or may I go to the bathroom? Yes, exactly. Or may I go to the bathroom? So that was very, very, very difficult. I was lucky enough that my dad went to college here when he was younger. So he understood English. But regardless, if you're talking about history, if you're talking about word problems, word math problems, those were so difficult. So for me, that first year was tough in every single way. And I think the one thing that I always focused on when I was in eighth grade was, okay, I would raise my hand whenever the teacher would say, does anybody want to read? And I would want to read in English to kind of for her to correct my pronunciation, but I did not understand one word of what I was reading. So it took a while, and it wasn't up until ninth grade when I met this girl, Amina. She is from Algeria. And she had arrived, I think, the year prior to me. And she didn't speak one word of Spanish. She only spoke Arabic and French. I only spoke Spanish. So we were both forced to speak English. So I think that was the biggest help for me because I needed to have a dictionary in hand to try and put words together. Or if like I knew the sentence, but I didn't know that word, I would come up with that word and be like, oh, okay, so this is what I want to say. And she would do the same thing. So that was big help. But yeah, challenges galore with, you know, especially if you come preteen, I think it's a big shock. But my parents were 100% supporting me each step of the way.
Did you manage to learn some Arabic or pick up any traditions from Amina? Or vice versa.
I think she picked up the dancing from me because we would have like school dances and there she was very shy, but she picked up a little bit of dancing. I didn't pick up any. Oh, well, I picked up like, you know, Habibi, the regular words, you know, to say hi to the mom and, you know, be very respectful. And it's funny because we lived in a building and she lived in the house behind me. So it worked out perfectly. And my mom didn't mind that I would go over there because she met her mom. And even though her mom didn't speak that much English and my mom didn't speak that much English, like whenever Amina came to my house, which wasn't that often because, you know, her parents were very strict, but my mom could tell that she was a good girl and educated and well-mannered by the way she handled herself. So I think she trusted her. But one thing I would say is I loved their food. I loved her. The food was amazing. Like whenever I would go, we would come back from school and they would say like, oh, come up and have lunch. And I was like, okay. So the first few times it looked a little bit weird. And then when I tried it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So yeah, it was a great experience.
And it's funny that you mentioned person coming from the Arab world, because I knew Arabs, Persians, and also many, many people growing up in California, and culturally speaking, very similar. I don't know if you agree.
I agree. My parents were very strict with me. There was no sleeping over at anybody's house. And the same thing was with her. And if I wanted Amina to come over, the mom would have her sister come drop her off and make sure that my mom was there or my dad was there, preferably my mom. And my mom used to be the same. Her dad used to drop us off at school, wait for us to go into the school, and the same thing with my dad. And the same thing with school dances. Amina wasn't allowed to go if she didn't have her cousins with her. And I wasn't allowed to go to school dances if I didn't have my sister with me. Wait, which mind you, my sister had already graduated high school in Ecuador. So I was sneaking her into my dances just so that I would be able to go. But that's just the culture. And I'm sure maybe you experienced it. I know I have experienced it, and my parents were very, very strict with rules, but I think that was great, especially for me, because coming into this country, it's easy when you have too much freedom to just kind of go down the wrong path.
I think for boys in both Arab and Ecuadorian cultures, it's a little bit different. So I was never chaperoned in that regard.
I agree.
What advice would you give families who are thinking about moving abroad with preteens or little children? What would you tell them?
I think it's definitely rough on the kids because, you're making a decision for them. I realized that when I was a grown-up, there were a lot of things that my parents did for my own good and for my own benefit, but there was a lot of hard work for me and a lot of struggling for me personally when I came to the States. Part of it was, I think, because I came at an age where you're either kind of have your group of friends here or you're sort of starting from scratch. I think that was one of the things. And I think it was just rough overall that first year because of the grade that I was in and I guess the teacher and the environment I was in. So I think what worked for me was that I was very honest with my mom, and my mom would always tell me, you need to let me know if something's going wrong at school. And I was lucky enough that my mom was always there, but she still worked, but she always made sure that if I had an issue or something at school, she would go and talk to the principal, to the teacher. She would go to work a little bit later and make sure that she would take care of that. I think it's good to have that open communication with your kids and not be overbearing, but tell them, hey, like, I know you're struggling. I know this is hard, but we, you know, let's work through it together. Let's try and figure things out. And it's especially hard if you're bringing your kids to another country, another language, another culture. It's like three and another weather, different weather. It's like so many culture shocks, so many shocks overall for somebody that's so little, that has learned or has seen how things worked and has lived in one place. And you take that comfort zone out of that kid and you take him somewhere else. Yes, you're able to adjust quicker when you're younger, but you're still like, it's a lot for a kid. You know, if it's a lot for an adult when you're leaving your job, you're leaving your family, you're leaving your friends, you're leaving everything behind, you know, think about a kid. It's a lot. So I think for parents, it's important for them to just be there for their kids. And it's hard in the States, whoever is an immigrant child that's listening right now, they know that when you come to the States or when you go to another country, especially in the States, parents, when they come to the States, sometimes they work three jobs a day and they don't see their kids. So their kids are on their own pretty much. And that is the culture really here in the States. You know, in Ecuador, la mama, mom was always at home or at least worked, but make sure to be at home. Or they had the help. Sometimes they had like somebody to be there. Yeah, a maid, a babysitter. I remember I used to always even have a babysitter that would pick me up from the bus stop and cook for me and be there until my parents would come in Ecuador. But over here, you know, if you're an immigrant, obviously you've left your country for financial problems or political reasons, you know, when you come to States, you don't have that luxury. And I think it's important to make sure that if you have a partner, that you are able to divide the time and make sure that one of you is always with your kid. Because I work in news and I've seen a lot of cases where that's a critical age when you come between 12 and 16 and they don't have the presence of their mom at home and they've end up in gangs and, you know, they end up being drug dealers. And that's a fact. We've covered a lot of those cases here up in Boston. And it's sad because family comes to seek a better future, but they're so worried about making ends meet, right? Because when you come to the States, it's not like you earn so much money as a immigrant. You come here to make ends meet, to send the money back to your country and to make sure that your family is okay here. And so while trying to do that, your kids are probably following the wrong steps. And that's not anybody's fault, but, you know, it's just the circumstances that families find themselves in.
You could see it in Spain, for instance, when all those immigrants went from South America, and unfortunately a lot of these same type of gangs started and the same type of cycle of poverty and and so forth could be seen there. You've described yourself as a shy person a little bit earlier, yet you decided to go into journalism. How did you become a journalist? Walk us through a little bit. You're currently in Boston, but you started out in New Jersey, you worked in Las Vegas, and then you moved where you're at currently.
For starters, I was very shy. I was a shy girl that wanted to be a big superstar. I actually wanted to be a singer. I never knew I wanted to be a journalist. Sometimes you talk to people and they're like, oh, I knew I wanted to be a journalist when I was 10 years old and I watched so-and-so on TV. That was not Grace Gomez. Grace Gomez wanted to be a singer. She wanted to tour the world. She wanted to be a big superstar. That's what I always wanted to do.
I'm sorry to interrupt. What kind of music did you want to sing?
Actually, I mean, it was pop. I do like Celine Dion. I do like Mariah Carey, the soft ballads and slow music. I like that a lot. But I also like salsa and all that. So it just depends, really. If I really like the music or if I really like the song, I'll sing it. But because I was shy, my dad used to tell me back in the day, oh my gosh, we should go and take you to Sábado Gigante, which I'm sure everybody knows what Sábado Gigante is. I'm not sure if
it's a variety show in the 80s and 90s. There were all kinds of contests and, and presentations and, you know, it was like four hours of Latino fun.
Yeah, it was. And what did you have to watch on Saturday night when you were home? Don Francisco y Sábado Gigante with your parents. So I was very shy and I never really did make it. So once I got to college, I said, okay, let me take music classes because maybe that would lead me to do something. And my dad and my mom used to say something very valid. Okay, well, you're going to take music classes. What are you going to do with that afterwards? And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I'll be, you know, a teacher. That first semester I took music theory, and that's like learning a new language. And I said, this is not for me. So I was back to square one, and a lot of my college friends that I've been hanging out with, they were going into being nurses. So I'm like, maybe I'll go into that just because I saw my friends. For me, it was the end goal being a superstar or an actress or something that had to do with that. And my dad came to the community college I was attending and he said, well, why don't you take a TV production class? They have TV production here. I think this would be good for you. You know, I reluctantly took the class and I fell in love with it. And it was during the time that I became president on student government. I joined student government while I was at this community college as a senator. And I joined with my best friend and we were very involved, so much so that the president and vice president were like, well, you guys should run because I think you guys would do good. And we did, and we won, you know? So then I became the student government president. I don't know how, because I had to do all these speeches. And whenever I did the speeches, I used to sweat my brains out. Mm-hmm. And I used to have to put like little notes on the side that said, slow down, you're doing great. Just look straight ahead. Don't make eye contact because I would get nervous.
You'd give yourself a post-it pep talk.
Yeah, post-it pep talk. I needed it. And I needed to have somebody that I knew there. Like my best friend would always be there. Or sometimes my parents would come if there was like a big event. I was doing that. And then I took the TV production and I liked it. And then once I got to the four-year school, which is Montclair State University, I stuck with it. And I did my degree there on broadcasting. I never took a journalism class there. I did take a news writing class. Even then, I didn't want to do news. So I worked behind cameras for a while. I worked for Law & Order SVU. I worked for a bunch of shows up here. Then I ended up doing a couple of internships for The View and CNBC. Then after all that was done, I decided that I needed to start doing some on-camera stuff because otherwise I wasn't going to get done. And back then I wanted to do entertainment. Even then I was no, news is not for me. I want to do entertainment. You know, I want to be like interviewing all these big stars. So I got a freelance gig as an entertainment reporter, but I first had to fill in for the reporter that was going on vacation. So they hired me for that and I did good and they liked it. And then they asked me, well, what do you want to do? And said, well, entertainment. So I used to do a little bit of everything. I used to do entertainment and then I used to also help them edit. Sometimes I would go out and record. So it was good. And then whenever the reporter would go away on vacation, the more I would do news, the more that even my coworkers would say, you're so good. They would go as far as like, you're even better than, you know, the main person. And so I'm like, no, Free, this is not for me. But the more I would do it, the more I would look back, I'm like, actually, it's not bad. It looks good. So then I started doing some digging about how to put a story together, what entitles to be a journalist, you know, the digging. I like to do more featurey stories. I do digging for the stories when I have to, but I like to do more featurey stories. That's where I'm at my best, telling the stories of immigrants here or shedding light on some of the aspects of being an immigrant or health. I just did a story for Boston Children's Hospital about little Kenny. He's 3 years old and you know, he was born with so many complications. And so I did a story on him in English and Spanish. So that's how I started. I started doing that. And then once the whole freelance gig in New York was done, I had enough material for a reel, which is a demo that you send out to news directors and you apply. So I literally applied everywhere. Rodrigo, I applied to clearly Las Vegas because I got hired there, but I applied to Texas. It was wherever they would hire me, I would go. Even in my shyness and even if I was like the baby one, I knew that I had to take a risk to follow my dreams.
And did you want to do news in English or in Spanish or both as you do now?
My end goal was to do news in English. At the moment, when I had just graduated, this was back in 2010, so this was a decade ago, it was hard for Latina journalists to break into English TV here. Not difficult or not impossible, but it was hard. I knew it was going to be hard for me. I knew it was going to be difficult. So I said, hey, I've done Spanish. It looks good so far. And I had most of my material in Spanish. So I said, you know what, let me stick to Spanish and let's see how I can make it to do both. Because ideally, that's what I would like to do. That's my end goal. And that's what I'm doing now. Right now, I'm anchoring. I'm the main news anchor for Telemundo, but I'm just doing reports for NBC. So whenever they need me, I jump on board and I do a couple of reports for them a day.
And if I understood correctly, the stories are on the same plane, if you will, are the same type of stories in both languages, or how do they differ?
Well, it's a different audience. So what matters to Latinos here may not necessarily matter that much to the American audience. A clear example, if there's a decision with the Supreme Court about immigration and how that's going to affect the process of getting your papers here, getting legalized here, that is a breaking news for Telemundo because half of our audience are, you know, especially if that affects TPS, DACA, all these people that are under those special programs, immigration programs, the other dreamers, that's going to affect them. That may not so much matter to American audience that it still would make to air, but would probably be a little bit further into the newscast. So it's a different ball game in that sense. For example, recently there was a big COVID breakout in the baseball team here, the Red Sox. At least 8 players were on quarantine because they were either positive or had been in close contact with somebody that was, you know, the majority of the players were Latinos. And that was also breaking news in English and Spanish because Boston's a big sports city. Obviously, if there's big breaking news as far as something happening in Boston, like a big fire or, you know, an explosive device or something like that, that's breaking news on both. So it just depends because our audience is very different. But for me, when I do reports in English, when I just do like little informative packages, they would assign me to it. For example, last week we had Hurricane Ida, which swept away through a lot of states. We got hit up here in Massachusetts, not as bad as New Jersey and New York and other states like Louisiana. But, you know, I had to do a report about that and what was going on and, you know, to kind of do like a wrap up of what was going on over there and with what the government is doing, the cleanup efforts and all that. So, and that's national news. So sometimes they'll have me do more of like a national news package of whatever, you know, important aspect is going on or what's current that week.
I got to ask you, I'm sure you meet famous people. Do you ever get starstruck? Because you mentioned that you worked in The View and you had a conversation with Barbara Walters, extremely famous journalist.
I do get starstruck, but I try to play it cool. So inside I'll be like, oh my God. But outside I'm like, okay, I think I get starstruck with like boy bands more like than women because I did meet that another besides Barbara Walters, which was probably the highlight of my career as a journalist. Which by back then I didn't even know I wanted to be a journalist, but I did ask her, and look how ironic life is, right? I asked her for an advice, and she gave me a great advice, and I use that to my advantage up here now that I'm a journalist. But I did meet other people. I met Will Smith. I met Beyonce. I met Kim Kardashian, all the Kardashian sisters. I never really got starstruck. I met a bunch of hip hop artists that they would go and perform. I worked with Whoopi Goldberg. I mean, who does not know Whoopi? And I used to watch her when I was back in Ecuador, or all her movies dubbed in Spanish. So I never really got starstruck. I would just be like, oh my gosh, that's huge. I wish I had a picture. And I never really took a picture because I knew I was in a professional setting. So I knew my limits. I know that all the other people that worked around me, perhaps they did, but I knew, I'm like, okay, well, this is, you know, like a professional setting. I'm able to handle it very well because maybe deep down inside, at one point, I sort of wanted to be like them. And I figured that if they're nice enough to talk to me or to even acknowledge me, like I should do the same if I ever am at that point. And so now I'm a local news anchor. Last weekend, I went out to a concert in Boston at a venue which is open up. It's not closed. But, you know, the cleaning staff, they recognized me because they watch me every day and they were afraid to come up and say hi. And absolutely not. Like, if you see me, I'd rather just talk to you and learn who you are. And if I'm not mistaken, I think their names were Cindy and Melissa. I talked to them. They're two mothers that came from Honduras. They've been working nonstop and, you know, they're finally happy that they're able to get back into work normally. So I like to talk to them. I like to know who they are because at the end of the day, that's the community I'm serving. And I think that's what makes the great people that are able to take time out of their day to talk to somebody, even if it's for advice, or just to hear their story, or just talk to them.
Well, you doing this podcast is a testament to to that friendly approach that you have, which I really appreciate. And to be clear, this is the second interview you do with me. One has been in Spanish, and in this one, obviously in English. You won not one, but four Emmys. It's a mind-boggling. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How did you accomplish that?
So these four Emmys, I want to make sure that everybody knows that this was not a job done by myself. By all means, I have a great group of coworkers and amazing journalists who day in and day out have worked their butt off, especially more so during the last year and a half with COVID-19. Telemundo New England, which is the newscast that I worked for, we were the only newscast in Spanish bringing live reports as all this COVID-19 information was gushing out. And it was imperative and it was very, very important for our Latino community here to understand what was going on in their own language. So these Emmys, two of them were for the continued coverage and the breaking news coverage on COVID-19 and how it affected our community. And the other two were, one was specially made to help our community businesses. Besides losing lives, I think the other important aspect of this pandemic has been the loss of businesses and how small businesses, which really make the economy, the local economy,
the mom and pops, yeah.
Yeah, have worked so hard and gotten so little back. And so we did a special that is called Apoyando Nuestras Comunidades, which means supporting our communities. And we interviewed a bunch of local businesses to see what they were doing to make sure to protect the locals when they wanted to go, you know, eat food or buy stuff. So we won an Emmy for that. And I think that was one of the most important ones. And the other Emmy that's the most special one for me personally, it's the one we won highlighting our Latino traditions during Christmas. And it was especially important because I think for my parents, setting up the Christmas tree, setting up the nativity, singing the villancicos or the Christmas songs, making the little candy bags that they make in Ecuador to give to the kids,
right.
Cooking, you know, either ham or turkey, having the meal sitting around, talking about El Paso del Niño, you know, like the big parade that you do in Ecuador. Those are things that my parents always instill in me and my siblings, and I keep that very close. So we actually won an Emmy for that. For the one of the traditions was Ecuadorians. We had a bunch of other countries that also showcase their traditions, but it was important for us to showcase that. And so that Emmy I actually gifted to my parents when I saw them, because I always say that my success is mine because I've worked hard, but my success wouldn't have been possible without the support of my parents and my family that were 100% behind me every step of the way. And, you know, I've been away from them for 7 years. So it's taking about 7 years for me to win my Emmys. And I am humbled by the recognition of my peers, especially because one of the newscasts was also the best evening newscast in the market. And that's huge because we're competing against our colleagues that only speak English. And obviously the American audience up here is a lot bigger, but that the fact that we're number two in the market, it's a testament to how important Latinos are becoming, not only in the Boston and New England area, but in the United States. There's has been an increase of Latinos here in the States that have made changes, positive impact and changes to this country. And so I'm humbled by all this Emmys. And I thank, again, my colleagues, my family, and of course, the viewers for trusting us and trusting our work.
Right. I mean, you just mentioned that the Red Sox were mostly Latinos, or a big number of them were Latinos, yeah. Right? Next time you see them, that tell them that the Yankees are better, or don't.
Maybe not.
Not
maybe
as good as the Dodgers, though.
Listen, one thing I learned.
And that was the last. and that was the last time Grace was in Boston.
And Grace goes back to Jersey. the one thing I learned the first year that I was here, people here in Boston are very passionate. And it's very hard to be a New York Giants fan, me, living in New England Patriots world, especially in the Tom Brady era.
Oh, yeah.
That has since ended, but still there's a lot of pride on being a New England Patriot. So, and it stinks the New England Patriots that New York Giants, especially Eli Manning, the former quarterback, took two rings from them. So I always bring that up and people don't like it.
You don't have to tell me. I mean, in the 80s, I'm a Lakers fan, obviously, and we hated the Celtics and they hated us back. So finally, the Lakers won over them. And well, that was like over 30 years ago. But anyway, what are your favorite places in Massachusetts, and how do you decompress, not just from work, but from the news and from everything else?
For me, it's always been about nature, and it may very well have to do with my roots from Ecuador. I mean, we are surrounded by mountains and by beautiful, beautiful places to go and visit down there. So whenever I'm up here, I like to go usually for a hike or just drive around. One of the places that I love going to here in New England is the White Mountains. That's up in New Hampshire. It's a little bit of a drive, 2 hours and a half, but they have Cannon Mountain up there. They have a little trolley that takes you up, or you can hike up. I honestly took the easy way, the trolley up. And as far as beach, Cape Cod has really nice beaches here in Massachusetts, as well as Rhode Island. I've always said with Rhode Island, it's such a small state, but it's such a touristy state. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. If my news station wasn't 45 minutes to an hour away from Rhode Island, I totally would have moved there. The cost of living is a lot less, and I think it's a lot quieter and a lot better overall. There's this one city there. It's called Newport. It's by the water. You have all these cute restaurants, and you have all the mansions that you can actually go in. These are like Rockefeller mansions. You know, they're very well kept. They're almost like museums now. So you're able to go see the history. So for me, it's always been about nature. I do go into the city in Boston, not so much since I've moved out to the suburbs, but I used to go to the city a lot. It has great restaurants to go to. And the majority of the people, the kitchen staff and the restaurants are Latinos. So, you know, they put in that Latino flavor in their food. So it's great. Boston's a good city. It's especially beautiful in the summer and in spring. Once it gets cold, not so much. It's too cold. It's right by the water. So it's definitely 10 degrees colder than New York and New Jersey, and you definitely feel it.
The worst cold that I've ever experienced was in New York. And I live in a city that gets really, really cold every year, Prague. Mm-hmm. My first guest in this podcast was an artist who lives here in Prague. She is from Cape Cod. She's from Provincetown.
Yeah. And
fantastic artist. Her family is also pretty well known in Provincetown. And every year, speaking of Christmas traditions, they build this Christmas tree from lobster cages. And they put lights on it, and they featured it in the news and so forth. So they're mm-hmm. pretty well known in Provincetown. So if you ever want a story from that town, a
yeah, Popko
family
awesome.
Christmas tradition.
Yeah, that would be so awesome.
Shout out to April. Is there anything you would like to say to the audience before we say goodbye?
I think for the audience, whether you are Ecuadorian or whether you're not Ecuadorian, I always say that our country, Ecuador, is so underrated. And it's a country that's very small, but it's a country that has so much to give and so much tourism to be exploited. It hasn't. And it's a country that you can live like a king for so little, because we are dollarized. So you get a lot of bang for your buck down there if you go on vacation. I feel like I'm always promoting Ecuador as a touristy destination, because I feel like there's so much there that you absolutely need to go and visit. For anybody that's willing to listen to my advice, just at least one time go to Ecuador and make sure you go to Galapagos Islands, because I used to spend my summers out there when I was a kid. My uncle lived there and still lives in Galapagos Island, San Cristobal Island, and it's just beautiful. And for anyone that wants to move ahead in another country while facing challenges and while facing scrutiny and while facing comments from people that will tell you that you can never make it because of your accent or because where you come from or the way that you handle yourself or because you don't quote unquote fit in, don't listen to them. Follow your dream, work hard, find yourself a group of people that can support you, whether it's your family or your friends, and keep moving forward. Things don't come in easy. You have to work hard to get to where you want to go. And you have to keep grinding even harder once you're there, because there are other people just as equally, if not more hungry than you are. But if you handle yourself the right way, if you are humble, and if you are a person with a good heart, I always think that when you mix all that together and you don't let things get to your head, the right people are putting your path and things just fall into place for you to reach your dream and get to where you want to go.
Fantastic. Grace, once again, I want to thank you for your time, for having shared your stories, your life. You know, when I think of Ecuadorians that are role models or Latinos that are role models, certainly, definitely you are one of them. You're an example of what people who move to other countries should do. And I just wish you continued success. So far you have 4 Emmys, but I'm sure you'll win 3-4 times that amount. And I wish you all the best. And if you're ever in Europe, please, you have a cousin here, and I would love to meet you personally, and take care.
Thank you. Thank you, Rodrigo. We'll take you up on that opportunity when I go to Europe. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you once again for listening. And I hope you'll join me in the next episode. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate the show, and leave your comments. If you want to write to me, my address is inbetweenexpats@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just type @inbetweenexpats. Until next time, take care.